Chapter 5. Confidence. Building mental toughness from the ground up. How top players think. Peter Jacobson tells a story about being paired with Andy Bean and Jack Nicklaus in the 1986 Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village in Columbus, Ohio. Nicklaus had shot 30 the last round on the backside at Augusta to win his 6th Masters at the age of 46 a few weeks earlier. Jacobson, Nicklaus, and Bean were all about even on Sunday after 9 holes. The gallery was huge. They were there to follow their local favorite and 1986 Masters champion. Then, Nicklaus birdied 10, 11, 12, and 13. As the birdie string began, the crowd grew. Their approach shots to the 14th hole left Jacobson 4 feet, Bean 12 feet, and Nicklaus 15 feet from the hole. Nicklaus was obviously away, and it was his turn to putt. However, Bean set his ball down, putted first, and made his. The crowd applauded. Then Nicklaus turned to Jacobson and said, "Peter, do you want to go ahead and putt out?" Jacobson responded, "Why would I want to putt out, Jack? You're away." Then Nicklaus said, "Because when I make this putt, the people here are going to go crazy." Nicklaus made the putt, and a deafening roar went up from the thousands of onlookers. A similar story was told by Tom Weisskopf. It was the 1973 Ryder Cup, and I quote, "We're one or two up on the Brits we're playing when Jack and I both knock the ball close. He's about 10 feet away, and I'm within 5 or 6 feet. Now I'm in Jack's line and about to mark my ball when Jack says, 'Pick it up.' I look at him incredulously and say, 'What? Rack your cue,' he says. 'I'm going to sink mine.' So I pick up the ball, stand back, and sure enough, he rams it into the center of the cup. When you ask Jack Nicklaus about putting, he says, 'It's all in the mind. Believe you can knock them in the hole and you'll knock them in. Believe you can't and you won't.'" I would be remiss if I didn't also highlight some of Nicklaus's comments regarding the mechanics of putting. Interestingly, he says, "Achieving equal grip pressure in both hands at address, then sustaining it throughout the stroke, has been a putting key of mine for many years." He also says that you should have your eyes over the target line, putt for distance, find a stroke that is natural for you, stay with your putting style, and don't change. I couldn't leave you with the feeling that putting is all confidence and no mechanics. As Nicklaus says, a belief that you can putt is important. Two great putters, Dave Stockton and Greg Norman, have both made confident comments about their putting ability. Confidence alone won't change your performance. Confidence is based upon performance and how you talk to yourself about your accomplishments on the greens, tees, and fairways. If your thought focus is on the great shots and putts you make during a round or in practice, you'll build confidence. If your thought focus is on your bad shots and missed putts, you will build self-doubt. It's as simple as that. Most players have ingrained habits of focusing on their poor shots and missed putts. As you have already read, what you feed attention grows. Sam Snead said the following regarding confidence. "Whenever I've been able to pull myself out of a slump, it's because I didn't forget that breaks always even out over the long pull, and that the bane of golf, and life in general, is to remember your mistakes and not your right moves. In clubhouses, you'll see men sitting around complaining, going over their bad shots. They should think back to their good shots, then try to repeat them. This is the only way to build that feeling called confidence. You can build it or tear yourself down. The choice is up to every individual. If you know yourself to be a whiner, you'll never play up to your full ability. It takes guts to be an optimist in golf. He who thinks like a winner will win." Well done, Sam. European Tour and Ryder Cup player David Faraday made golf his career in spite of the fact that he was never a champion in his youth. His mother stated that what set David apart was blind ambition. He thought he was better than he was at the time. During his rookie year in 1990, Robert Gamez was quoted as saying, "I feel I can win any time I tee it up. I don't feel like I'll finish out of the top 20, and that's playing bad. I feel like if I play halfway decent, I'll finish in the top 10. And if I play good, I should win. People see me as cocky because I walk to the tee like I'm better than everybody. I'm just walking with a lot of confidence. If I don't feel like I can win a tournament, I won't play." Ben Crenshaw ended a 2-year winless period at the 1992 Western Open. He described his thoughts when he got into contention for the win. I realized it was like riding a bike. I just told myself, you've been there before, you can do this. Watson won the 1975 British Open and the 1977 Masters and British Open. He described his conclusions and internal dialogue associated with these wins. He said to himself, maybe you can play this game. Maybe you are a quality player. Obviously, the wins helped my confidence. When you are as tight as I am, or any player is who is under pressure, and you experience that kind of success, you finally start believing in yourself. I would like to see you, unlike Watson, build confidence around good shots and solid putts, not wins. In an interview with Golf World during the spring of 1992, Payne Stewart said, my game hasn't been brilliant. There's absolutely nothing mechanical wrong with my game, just confidence and momentum. Once you start playing well, you get that confidence. I still haven't quite got the momentum I need. On his way to winning the PGA Tour's Canadian Open in September 1992, Greg Norman made an interesting observation regarding his putting. I prided myself on that, meaning putting, in the past. I was one of the best putters inside 10 feet God ever put on the planet. This just shows me that all my worries the last 14 months about my putting stroke were ballooned. It's easy to say now, sitting up here after I've won, but my putting stroke never left. It was just a matter of trusting it. Putting had been my downfall all year. You try to fix your stroke, and in the end, it's not your stroke. It's probably your posture. I probably fiddled around with it too much. Confidence is something that is built in small steps. Watson's or Gamez's belief that they can win is based upon a confidence in their total game. Good players have confidence in every shot they make. I believe Sam Snead described the process best. What you feed attention grows. If you focus on your mistakes or poor shots and take your good shots for granted, you will recall those bad shots when faced with the same or similar situation again. This thinking style will drain your confidence. It's as simple as that. How confidence develops. We learn at an early age to practice negative, self-critical thinking. Consider, for example, our parenting styles or the way we were parented. Were we praised for what we did well or more often told what we did incorrectly? Our laws are negative and punitive. Teachers record the number wrong at the top of a corrected paper, seldom the number correct. As children, we internalize this communication style. It becomes the foundation of our communication with ourselves. Our internal dialogues with ourselves that become the strategies for our perceptions about the world are shaped from an early age. These events produced our present-day thinking habits, especially in our styles of internal communication. Our negative versus positive perception strategies are learned from how we were parented as children and from the social interactive world in which we live. You work at your job for 7 hours and 55 minutes, and things go well. Then, in the span of 90 seconds, you have a problem that becomes apparent to your supervisor. What do you think your supervisor is going to comment on? Will you hear about the 7-plus hours of success or the 90 seconds of problem? What will you be thinking about at the end of the day? Will your thought focus be upon the success of the day or the failure? We are unwittingly taught from an early age to take our successes for granted. Self-confidence results from our beliefs and thoughts about our capabilities. If our successes are taken for granted and our focus is upon what is wrong rather than upon what is right, our confidence level will be low. Our confidence in our abilities as golfers is equal to our perceptions of our performance. Everything you do has some form of evaluation by you. You have a habit of paying attention to either problems or successes. I find it interesting and predictable when working on the practice green with the students that putts roll in the hole and there is complete silence. When a putt misses, there's a comment, a groan, or a frown. I see the same thing in the full swing. Great shot, not a word. Bad shot, and you hear it. Sometimes a fairway away. 2 or 3 bad shots in a row, look out. When a new student on the lesson tee hits a bad shot, he will turn to me and say, what did I do wrong? Or, what caused that? When that same student hits a good shot, I never hear, what caused that? That's what I encourage students to ask themselves. Remember, what you feed attention grows. The following are a few examples of what you might say to yourself following a good shot on the range or during play. Contact was solid. I was in balance at setup. I finished the swing in balance. My tempo was good. My setup felt well grounded. I only thought about the shot I was hitting. I planned that shot well. I chose the right club. I was confident I could hit the shot. Had a good image and feeling of the swing I wanted to make. I chose a specific target and stayed focused on the target through my routine. I was relaxed. I thought about the same shot I hit well on my home course last week. I remembered the ball flight and could picture and feel the swing. I took a practice swing and focused on the feeling of the swing. I was able to repeat the feeling of my practice swing as I hit my shot. Now I'm going to recall those thoughts and feelings and repeat that shot again, or I'm going to bank that shot so it is available to call up when I need it in the future. Author and golf enthusiast Ken Blanchard described a discussion he had with Jay Siegel, two-time United States amateur champion, British amateur champion, and the longest-standing member of the Walker Cup team. You can never tell from the look on Jay Siegel's face what shot he has hit. He never shows any emotion at all. Blanchard reported Siegel's comments about emotional control. When I hit a good shot, I tell myself, good shot, then respond with an inner smile. On the outside, you wouldn't notice, but there is a difference in the way I respond to a well-struck shot and a poor one. Siegel won his first professional tour event in 1994 as a rookie on the senior tour. What do you say and do following good shots and bad shots? Do you talk to yourself about what went well, or do you take good shots for granted and focus most of your attention on poor performance? I'm sure the concept of post-swing routine is new to most of you, although it exists in every swing. What do you say to yourself after each shot? As I said earlier, you should have an expectancy and belief of hitting every shot you want to hit well. Recognize after the shot that the best players in the world hit an average of just under 13 greens per round and make only 45 to 55% of 6-foot putts. The greatest players in the world had their problems too. Ray Floyd was contending at the 1994 Senior PGA Championship when he hit two straight shots in the water. Payne Stewart laid up at the 1994 Masters on the 15th hole only to put two straight wedges in the water. Ben Crenshaw took a 13 on a hole after hitting four straight shots in the water at the 1994 Bob Hope Classic. As I mentioned earlier, one of the greatest players of the early 1900s was Walter Hagen. He had an interesting strategy for dealing with bad shots. Reportedly, he said he expected to hit seven bad shots around. When he hit a bad shot, it was expected. It was just another one of the seven. So when he was playing really well and hit a bad shot, it was no surprise and there was no unnecessary emotion wasted on poor performance. Unnecessary emotion creates tension. It creates a loss of concentration, and the list goes on. There is one word that will account for 60 to 70% of the mental game. That's confidence. When you do anything in your day-to-day life confidently, you're relaxed and you predict success. You have images of success. Confidence is built on both sides of the golf swing, pre-swing and post-swing, and experienced in-swing. When PGA Tour player Fred Couples was asked how many players on tour are better than he, his response was none. Nick Price had an unbelievable year last year, but I don't think he's a better player than I am. I'm part of a group at the top. Senior PGA Tour Mike Hill, winner of several regular tour events in the 1970s and two senior tour events in the 1990s, says the following. You have to be tough in your mental approach. Tough enough to stand it when you're not as successful as you think you ought to be. It takes a certain amount of toughness to win when it's time to come down the stretch and hit golf shots and make yourself do those things. There is a direct correlation between being tough and being a winner. I am able to draw upon myself to win when I need to. I believe it's the end in, not the arrow. Confidence carries with it a feeling of being in control. A lack of confidence carries with it a feeling of being out of control. Confidence results from what we tell ourselves about our performance. Consider the following. Your golf instructor follows you for a round of golf and tells you what a great golfer you are every time you hit a good shot. When you hit a poor shot, your instructor says, ignore it. All players hit some poor shots. How do you think you would feel at the end of a round? Confident? Probably. It is important that you are positive with yourself, both on and off the golf course. Most of you wouldn't dare talk to anyone else in the way you talk to yourselves. You tend to take good shots for granted and kick yourself in the pants for the poor shots. Consider how you would feel if your instructor ignored your good shots and focused only on your poor shots, or if he told you what an awful player you were. Johnny Miller described his father's communication with him regarding his golf performance. "One thing that my father always did, and he put in thousands of hours with me, was accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative. He was smart enough to realize that golf is a game of misses, even for the pros, who hit a couple of shots a day that they would classify as great shots." If you as a parent are always looking for a great shot from your kid, then you're both going to have a lot of disappointment. Johnny Miller likely internalized this positive communication style from his father, and it became a habit of communication with himself. These kinds of habits become the internal dialogue that is the foundation of mental toughness. Keep one thing in mind, once again, what we feed attention grows. Like all other habits, this style of internal communication resides in the neural networks of the brain. Given a particular condition, the circuitry is activated or triggered. If the habit pattern is a negative evaluation, that's likely what will be triggered unless you actively intercept this process through conscious thought. If your style is to negatively and self-critically evaluate yourself, and you choose to change, you will need a written, structured plan and daily practice to change both the behavior and the neuroanatomical basis of the habit. Insight is the first step to change. However, it won't change the long-practiced and reinforced physical structures of the nervous system. Recent brain research using the PET scanning procedure described in the chapter on visualization showed that people who suffer from depression have a specific neurochemical cluster which non-depressed people don't have. Interestingly, non-depressed people participating in a study were asked to engage in sad or negative thinking. With the onset of negative thoughts, these non-depressed people began to show neurochemical activity at the same site, and that's the left frontal cortex of the brain, as that found in depressed people. Without question, this study and research in treatment of mood disturbance through cognitive behavior therapy show that negative thinking not only depletes confidence, but also it can affect mood and structural changes in the brain that become the physical foundations of habits. Psychologists have known for years that a style of negative self-judgment and evaluation creates an emotional state of depression. Cognitive therapists teach their clients to talk differently to themselves by teaching them to discontinue their negative self-punitive conversations and to substitute supportive, self-reinforcing internal dialogue. I used these strategies for years in my clinical practice to treat a wide range of disorders. These strategies work. If you choose to change, it's going to take time and work. The work includes setting daily goals and practicing new thinking habits daily while recording in a written diary. Strategies for changing your thinking are presented in this chapter and the chapters titled How to Talk to Yourself on and Off the Golf Course and Live Clean in Place, Applying What You've Learned. Consolidation. The neurochemical process of converting short-term memory to long-term memory is called consolidation. Much research has been done over the years on the process of consolidation. Recent studies show that the limbic system, and that's the part of the brain which is the seat of emotions, plays a major role in the consolidation process. Those events where we experience the greatest emotion are going to be remembered more readily than those events we take for granted or to which we attach minimal emotion. Where do you respond with more emotion? Good play or poor play? Now, there is a trap in this process. Too much emotion attached to either good or poor play produces increased arousal. If your personality style is one of an over-aroused player, you run the risk of a loss of focus in the present, increased tempo, and a subsequent deterioration in performance. Acknowledge your good shots quietly to yourself. You know that internal feeling which comes with a good shot. Focus on it. Smile inwardly. After your round, sit down with your scorecard and review each hole. Recall your good and great shots. Attach emotion to those shots. Remember, anger and frustration will only serve to set the stage for recall of those bad shots, especially if you continue to emote over one shot. In this book, you will learn strategies to stop focusing on swing thoughts, to relax, to concentrate, to develop a routine, and so on. One word describes a significant percentage of the natural correction to many of these problem areas. That one word is confidence. You will be taught strategies to put out the fires of a crisis, both on and off the course. However, preventing these crises and developing mental toughness by learning and applying strategies to increase your confidence is a primary goal of this instruction. Learning how to positively reinforce your success is a big step in that direction. Changing your critical internal dialogue to positive. Gary Player describes the effects of negativity. He refers to comments like, "Gee, I'm unlucky. I never get a good bounce. I know I'm going to land in the water. I work hard and don't get anywhere. I never get a break." These golfers are beaten before they begin. To win, first, you must want to win. Second, believe you will win. And third, think only positive thoughts. We create our success or failure on the course, primarily by our thoughts. Now, you say things to yourself you would never say to others. Would you speak to a good friend the way you speak to yourself? Your answer is likely no. Why not? Because they wouldn't be a friend for long? Because it would dampen their self-confidence? What's it doing to you? The same thing. As you approach this overview on self-reinforcement, please try to remember the following. Talk to yourself as you would speak to someone you care about. Encourage. Be supporting. Counter negativity. Acknowledge success and create a positive internal existence. Be a good friend to yourself. The technique of self-reinforcement can be particularly useful in turning around habits of self-punitive or self-critical thinking. Examples of negative expectations and self-critical thinking might include predicting poor performance in shot making. I'd better use an old ball here. Or, I go right on this hole every time. I may as well set up right. You evaluate each shot with a focus on your mistakes, errors, or failures. Miss the green again, that's good for another bogey. In day-to-day life, this thought pattern might follow an 8-hour workday that went well except for a moment when you made a mistake. If you focus primarily on your mistake instead of the success in your day, you will see the day as a failure in general. If you focus only on poor shots, you will see yourself as a bad golfer. Again, please remember, what you feed attention grows. Now, the examples include, you evaluate past performance with unrealistic expectations. You attempt a shot that you aren't capable of executing. You become frustrated with your less-than-expected performance. You negate positive comments from others verbally or in your thinking. Not really, I hit it fat. Or, it wasn't a bad miss. If someone compliments you on what a good job you've done, you undo the praise by minimizing the importance of the job or talk about the mistakes you made. Or you thank them and focus your thoughts on the mistakes you made or minimize the accomplishment in your thinking. Thought patterns such as these are habits. If allowed to increase in frequency, they can virtually immobilize you. If all you notice or pay attention to are your errors and failures, you will begin to feel, what's the use of trying? And arousal levels build. This cycle intensifies if you set expectancies that are unrealistic, given your experience and capabilities. Self-reinforcement is a useful technique in interrupting self-critical thoughts. Don't blame me. There is another style of negativity that many great players use. Tour players have told me that they were instructed as rookies by the better players, never blame yourself for poor play. Now, this one was hard for me to take. It is completely contrary to any value I want my children to learn. Of course, you always assume full responsibility for your behavior. Don't blame others or conditions in the environment. Well, I have changed my position, at least my understanding of the principle. My sons will learn of this only if they read or hear this chapter. If you blame yourself for poor play, you will drain your confidence. If you make a bad stroke on the putting green and tell yourself it was a horrible stroke, you will start to believe you have a problem with mechanics. Begin to search for the mechanics problem and your performance will deteriorate. If it was a spike mark or another player's movement, well, there's no problem with your stroke, just a bad break, and your belief that all is intact mechanically will be retained. I have heard players overdo the discussion of bad breaks, bad greens, awful playing partners, and the reasons for poor play build and build. It's walking a fine line between retaining confidence and staying positive. I retreat to Walter Hagen's strategy. If you'll recall, he expected to hit 7 bad shots around. When he hit a bad shot, it was just another one of the 7. And, as Sam Snead says, breaks always even out over the long pull, and that the bane of golf and life in general is to remember your mistakes and not your right moves. As noted, your style of communication with yourself was ingrained at an early age. Not only is it part of your internal communication, but also it is part of the hardwiring of your nervous system. Like any other habit, it resides as part of the neuroanatomical nervous system structure, poised to be triggered by environmental events, the primary triggering event being performance. Performance lights up those centers of the brain that ferret out the problem. My swing was too quick. I hit it fat, thin, too high, low, and so on. On those occasions, when performance is good, the success is taken for granted. Attention, a powerful social reinforcer. As a university professor in a medical school, I wrote several journal articles and made films having to do with the impact of the social consequences of attention on health and illness. These articles included the following case studies. J.M. was a 10-year-old boy, burned over 65% of his legs. He was hospitalized several months, made no progress, and was facing the amputation of one or both legs. Sammy was projectile vomiting 25 to 30 times per day at 4 years old. Observation showed that J.M.'s increased pain complaints and refusal to participate in a physical therapy program and Sammy's vomiting showed that the majority of attention these children received followed the expression of pain and vomiting. When attention was directed to healthy behavior and illness behavior was ignored, these kids got better quickly. The medical and social histories of these children aren't quite as simple as I described. However, the treatment was. Attention is a very powerful reinforcer. Whether directed inwardly or outwardly, the things we pay attention to increase in quality and frequency. As noted many times, what we feed attention grows. It's important to focus our attention on the things we value, things we want to grow, both on and off the course, especially as related to ourselves. Self-reinforcement. Recall that PGA Tour player Greg Norman says that everybody likes to hear words of encouragement as he faces a tough shot, and congratulations after he pulls it off. Unfortunately, unless you play golf with your mother, you can't depend on hearing these things. That's why I talk to myself, not aloud, but inside my head. The tougher the shot I'm facing, the more I talk. If I'm on the last hole of a tournament, facing a long iron shot to the green, needing a birdie to win, I'll say to myself, "You know this shot cold. You've knocked it stiff 1,000 times. And now, you're going to do it again." I also talk after I hit shots. After a particularly long drive, I'll often say, "Damn, Greg, I'm pretty impressed with that one." These inner words can be more encouraging than the cheers of the gallery. You don't want to linger too long on your shots, good or bad, but you do want to stamp the good ones on your mind for future reference in pressure situations. Self-congratulations is one way to do that. Strategies for developing self-reinforcing internal dialogue. The following are steps for applying self-reinforcement techniques. Step 1. Listen in on your thinking on and off the course. Keep a diary of your self-communication style. Recognize self-critical thoughts. Behavior follows patterns. Keep a diary of the times and situations in which you practice a negative self-critical style of thinking and when you practice a positive self-supporting style. The conditions in which these patterns of internal dialogue occur will become apparent. Once you identify the times and situations for negative self-critical discussion, discontinue your diary of this negative style. Remember, what you feed attention grows. Keep a diary only of your positive conversations with yourself. Step 2. Develop cues or reminders to focus on self-supporting statements. Place a 5x7 card on your mirror or in your desk drawer that you open every morning and evening. Write positive focus, praise self, or some similar reminder on this card. Step 3. Use the techniques for thought restructuring covered in the chapter, How to Talk to Yourself on and off the golf course. Review the consequences of self-critical thinking, for example, anger, frustration, decreased self-esteem, immobilization, decreased initiative, increased muscle tension, physiology of arousal, sadness, and poor performance, and even depression in the more severe circumstances. Use these as reminders to redirect your thinking to mindfulness and a positive self-focus. Step 4. Practice the relaxation strategies and positive imagery you will be learning in the subsequent chapters. See yourself being successful. Schedule times daily when and where you will practice the imagery strategies. Focus on your recent success and future goals during these practice times. Step 5. Consider all the shots you hit well today. Rather than the shots you missed, the score, bogeys, doubles, putts, etc., say things to yourself that will compete with self-criticism. I played the best I could today. I have the opportunity to create whatever kind of day I choose. I am going to enjoy the rest of the day. Note, the Mind Under Par series scorecard provides the structure for this practice. Step 6. Keep a daily diary of the positive aspects of your game and your life. Review this diary at least weekly and visually recall the days and shots. Research in behavior therapy shows a common denominator for behavior change regardless of what the behavior is. That common denominator is keeping a diary. If you write things down daily, you will begin to see a positive change. Be sure your diary is positive and review your entries every couple of days. As long as you keep a positive diary, you will continue to experience behavior change. Review your diary weekly on the same day at the same time every week. Notice and record your success in change. You can begin this process on the course and carry it into your day-to-day life or vice versa. If you have a resume, review it. Look at what you have accomplished. Don't negate the positive. Recognize and focus on your accomplishments. This is a good springboard to begin your diary. Success focus. PGA Tour player Patrick Burke won his second Australian Tour event in December of 1994. He won his first, the Tournament Players Championship, in January of 1994. He contracted a virus at a European Tour event in the spring and was ill throughout the summer of 1994. He missed several PGA Tour events because of health. Patrick's confidence was beginning to wane due to his mediocre play during his illness. In preparation for returning to Australia to resume the tour in the fall, he began repeatedly watching a video of his January win. He finished second at the first event, Bali, and won the Victorian Open the following week. Seeing yourself succeed builds confidence. If you don't have a video of your past success, recall those successes from memory and replay them over and over again in your mind. Recall that Greg Norman describes his post-swing routine and how he talks to himself, so he can remember and repeat good shots. I also talk after I hit shots. After a particularly long straight drive, I'll often say, "Damn, Greg, I'm pretty impressed with that one." These inner words can be more encouraging than the cheers of the gallery. You don't want to linger too long on your shots, good or bad, but you do want to stamp the good ones on your mind for future reference in pressure situations. Silent self-congratulations is one way to do that. Focusing on success is a foreign concept to many of you. As noted, most of us take our success for granted, but not peak performers like Greg Norman. A success focus is the very foundation on which confidence is built. Call it self-reinforcement, self-congratulations, positive internal dialogue, success focus, positive self-talk, it's all the same. What it is not is taking your success for granted. I was traveling to a tournament site with my friend and fellow teacher, Derek Hardy. We were discussing the concept of self-reinforcement as part of the post-swing routine. This discussion led to the consideration of the kinds of comments a player might make to himself after a good or a great shot. These comments are supportive and build confidence in our ability to perform. The following is the list we generated. Great shot. Terrific. Okay. I can't be stopped. It's mine. Yes. Awesome. Felt great. Online all the way. That was solid. Easy. I'm playing well. Super. Outstanding. Good show. Beautiful. I'm good. Boy, can I putt. I know I can do this. This is mine. It's a walk in the park. Here I come. I have a great short game. I hit every drive solidly today. The fairways are 200 yards wide. Smooth. What a shot. Just as I called it. Perfect. Excellent. That's a 10. Piece of cake. Boy, was that pure. This list is an ideal. These comments will be performance enhancing. Remember, what you feed attention grows. I don't suggest that you announce any of these to your playing partners, only to yourself. There's a feeling that only you will experience when you hit a good shot. Savor that feeling. Recall the ball flight and the feeling of the swing. Smile inwardly. Never let your eyes drop below the horizon. There's a fine line between being self-supporting and building confidence and being obnoxious. You don't need to say these things to others. Your performance will speak for itself. When you are complimented by your playing partners, just say thanks. Don't negate the compliment, regardless of how uncomfortable it may make you at the time. Don't allow yourself to undo the compliment in your thinking. Say thanks, and tell yourself to accept the compliment. It's like changing your grip or putting your underwear on backwards. It's uncomfortable at first, but you get used to it, and in time it feels natural. Peak performers have an internal dialogue of confidence that sustains them. After winning his first senior PGA Tour victory at Dearborn, Michigan, 1991 Ryder Cup captain Dave Stockton said of the 9-foot putt he had to win, "I wouldn't want anyone else to putt that. I was born being able to putt." Lee Trevino won his 5th senior title at the Bell Atlantic Classic in May of 1992. After that win, he had 3 top 10 finishes and thumb surgery in December of 1992. He played his first 1993 tournament in mid-March and had only 1 top 10 finish in his first 5 starts. He finally got into contention again at the 1993 Bell Atlantic Classic, where he was defending his title. He finished that tournament tied for 3rd. He won the following week at the Cadillac NFL Golf Classic by 2 shots. He said of his climb back to the top, "I didn't expect to do anything last week, and then when I got in the lead, I was as surprised as anybody. But I came into this week expecting to win." Peak performance for world-class players and the mental toughness attitude that they can win are not something with which they are born. The internal dialogue and associated confidence are learned through a focus on their successful experiences. Many people have success. However, in this success, their focus is still on what went wrong, not what went right. PGA Tour player Rocco Mediate described an event that changed his outlook and expectancy when he is playing poorly. He relates the story. "It happened at Bay Hill this year." Now, this was 1993. "I was 6 over par after 11 holes the first day. 6 over. I had just doubled the 11th. I'm standing on the 12th tee. It's windy and it's tough. I got up and told my caddy, 'If we can just get 2 or 3 birdies, shoot 75 or 76, okay, I can handle it. Hey, I just missed birdie at 12. I birdie 13. I get up and down at 14. I birdie 15, eagle 16, birdie 17 and 18. When I got done, I looked at my caddy and said, 'What did I shoot?' He said, 'Even par.' I couldn't believe it. That changed my outlook on golf. I feel like now, no matter where I am, I can come back from adversity. I may not do it, but I know I have already done it." Senior PGA Tour player Larry Gilbert won the 1994 Vantage Championship. His best finish prior to that win was a 2nd in December 1993, when he lost to Ray Floyd in a playoff. He had earned over $1 million on the senior tour, despite not having won. He said the following regarding his climb to victory. "I couldn't convince myself that I was good enough to compete with those guys. Confidence is 90% of the battle against these guys. If you think you can beat them, you just might."
This is the end of Side A. Please turn the cassette over now for Side B.